Hey everybody, Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols here with another Tactical Fitness Report. And as you guys noticed, Jeff is a little prettier today. So we actually have Catherine, who is the better half of PerformanceFirstUS.com, joining us today because we are going to talk about something that's very important, and that is performance anxiety when it comes to big events like the first day of Buds, first day of Hell Week, or the first, you know, the night before Hell Week, you know, all these things that are really getting us very anxious and can really disturb our performance. Catherine is going to help us with defining what that is going on and then helping us not only prevent it, but if in the situation that we're in, that situation's getting a little anxious, how to notice it and stop it from killing our performance. So,
right.
Catherine, thank you so much for coming on and doing this. And I'm really glad Jeff made the recommendation of having you on for this one, because he's exactly right. I mean, this is what you do, correct?
Yeah, it is. Yep. So I went to, I started doing a meditation practice for myself about 6 years ago, and then really wanted to give back. And I took a 2 year teaching program to be able to give back in a way that I think would be helpful, especially to this population as far as, performance and performance anxiety.
So real quick, you have a tactical fitness conference coming up, you and Jeff and several other people. Who all is going to be at that tactical fitness conference coming up on the 21st, 22nd, and the 23rd?
Right.
Yep. This
so
month?
We have, yeah, so it's down here in Virginia Beach at our facility, and we have Tom from Thorn coming to talk about supplementation. We have Susan Lopez coming to talk nutrition. Dr. Rebecca Ivory talking about stress and operator syndrome. I'll be handling some of the stress and meditation piece and breathing. And then we have Jeff, of course, and Sheldon Stevens coming to do some of the exercise piece. So we'll have a 3 day event. It's pretty much all day long, each one of those
That's
days.
Really good, because you got the exercise piece, you got the diet piece, and you got the mind piece,
right,
all rolled into one conference there. So that's a nice one. I'm trying to make it down to it as well and just sit around and be a student.
Yeah, we'd love to have you, Stu.
All right, so let's talk about something I brought up the other day, because I have seen it occur personally with, you know, within my own class when I was going through training, but even myself when I was had big events that would occur, you know, throughout college, or, you know, big presentations, or, you know, big tests like the day before Bud starts, you know, and you got to show up and bring your A game. And just anxiety is just wreaking havoc in our body. So what exactly is happening, just hormonally speaking, and in our brain and body that's causing us to be so anxious, you know, prior to those moments?
Sure. So our nervous system, the way I explain it is, we have a parasympathetic nervous system, which is made for, I'm sure a lot of people have heard this, the rest and digest. And then our sympathetic nervous system is made for that fight or flight. And what's happening is your body's getting ready for that fight or flight. We start to kind of sense, oh, my heart rate's gone up, my palms are getting sweaty, my pupils are dilated, I'm getting ready. The issue is when that becomes too overwhelming, and it's too difficult to come back down from that, and we sort of spin out of control, and that's known as an amygdala hijack. I think it's also really important to understand that if you're going to come back down from a stressful event, or not let it get to the point where you can't handle it, is really actually having a relationship with your nervous system, so you can really identify when those moments are happening, right? So it's over time. It's with the practice. Like, you either prepare for it, that event, that day, that presentation, or you haven't. So, you know, we were chatting before too, trying to do something the day before probably isn't going to be quite enough to turn some of the anxiety down.
Right. Even though you have some nice breathing tips, you know, that we've all done, you know, that to help bring us down, you know, it just may not be enough, you're saying? Because, you know, something that I've noticed too is that someone who can be really smart, very high performing person, when you get that amygdala hijacked, like you said, and you're in that sympathetic fight or flight mode, it really shuts down the thinking part of your brain. And now you really don't think anymore.
Right. And yet, so you have, your body will still respond, you know, react to the stress rather than you having the ability to respond appropriately with the right emotions. That, like you said, that part of the brain got turned off. So your amygdala is a part of the brain called your limbic system, which is made for really instinct movement. And so when that part of the brain takes over, it sort of shuts offline your emotional way of going through something in a rational way. And that's for protection. That's to protect you from danger or harm or something like that. And human beings have been wired that way through evolution. And so once you begin to understand, okay, you know, this is becoming a little bit overwhelming, that's when we can start to do some breathing practices or, you know, meditation to bring down the anxiety and stress and not let it become this overwhelm where we have no control anymore.
Yeah. So how about this? You know, being in that fight or flight mode probably isn't bad, like for 10 or 20 minutes prior to breakout of Hell Week.
Right.
Because you're going to be pumped up, ready to go, and it's game on for the next couple of hours. And then things start settling down.
Yeah, it's necessary, right? It does get you ready. What also is happening is the your adrenaline, epinephrine are getting your body ready for that, right? That's what your pupils dilate, your blood vessels dilate, getting you ready. And hopefully not a lot of thinking has to take place when you're just trying to perform through something. And also when you guys are actually, you know, in buzz, all the repetition is because of this, so that when you are in the actual real life situation, you really don't have time to think, but your body has time to react to the situation of danger. And so the repetition over time with you guys in buds or something so extreme is so important, because we know that the thinking part is somewhat going to come offline.
Right. That's where you come up with a lot of the terms and phrases that, like, you know, I don't know, I don't even remember, my training just kicked in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
You tend to hear that a lot when it's a very high stress situation, very dangerous thing occurring, and then you get through it and you're like, yeah, I wasn't even thinking about all that stuff.
Right. And that's what we mean too, by, you know, preparing, and the repetition of whether it's the training and stuff, or whether it's a presentation, the preparing for that is so important. That way, when you're, you know, when all of your thought process does go offline, you still have the ability to perform the task needed without so much of the thinking part.
Right. So how about this? It's real handy, obviously, 20 minutes before game time like that, when it's that situation. But how about, you know, 12 hours before, when now, you know, you really just need a good night's sleep, mm-hmm. and you need to, like, not be so fired up right now, but, you know, 12 hours prior to Hell Week, or, you know, whatever a big event that is. Now you're just flooded with all this, like, anxiety of getting started. And for most of us, you know, just getting started is the release, right? And it's like, okay, now we can roll, right? Finally here, it's time to go. But, you know, I have seen it, like, make people freeze. You know, we have that fight, flight, or freeze. And it's just like, I'm done. I'm not even going to go attempt this next week.
Right. Yeah. So some of the things you can do 12 hours before, I think some of it is once you become aware of your nervous system and having that reaction, is having some of the tools to bring that back down. And not everything has to necessarily do with meditation or breathing. Some of it is like, what are the things that actually, that you know, work for you, right? Some people read, some people draw, some people go on walks and stuff like that, because sometimes actually breathing or sitting still is really, really challenging itself, right? Because we have to start to become comfortable with the unknown. And that's really hard to do. And the unknown is the thing that's not going away, like you said, until you're actually in the training, right? So it's more about accepting this is going to happen, this unknown thing is going to happen, and not letting our thoughts spin us out of control. So doing some of the things that are comfortable to you might be beneficial to keep from the overwhelm from happening. So yes, meditation is an incredible practice as far as really understanding how your breathing is relating to your external environment that you can't control. So what's happening inside of me as I, you know, as this other unknown is going on, and can I slow my breathing down, and what does that look like? And like I said, some of the other things too can be enjoyable, like reading, walking, stuff like that, that if you're not really into meditation or you're unfamiliar with breath practices, go to the things that you know actually work for you, right? Let's not take those away, and let's not try to change the system, your system, the night before, 12 hours before. Some of the things that we teach in here is a consistent meditation practice, just like we do with training, right? You're not going to see results of a breath practice really until you start practicing it. And breath practice and meditation are different, right? Like a breath practice, I think that a lot of SEALs are familiar with box breathing, which is really, really helpful. And what's actually happening when you're doing that is you're counting your breath and slowing it down. So it sort of takes your mind to a different place. As soon as you stop counting, or as soon as you lose track of your breathing, the distraction of the unknown or the fear starts to come back in. So the breathing practices and meditation really allow you to focus on slowing down rather than letting the flooding of the unknown start to really influence how you perform and how you feel.
No, that's a great idea. Cause I will say that's my number one go-to is box breathing and using it with walking.
Right.
So I'll go on like a nice little stroll. We have a little trail back here that I'll walk down. I'll do my force. You know, it doesn't have to be a particular number, you know, four second hold, four second out. Getting a big square and just continue that. And that has been very helpful for me over the years, no matter what that stress is.
Yeah. The other thing I want to touch on when we're doing that is your parasympathetic nervous system is being activated when you're doing that box breathing, or you're really intentionally, consciously thinking about slowing your breath. So your parasympathetic nervous system and your vagus nerve, which actually controls your breathing, really starts to lower your heart rate when you're doing that box breathing and you're really focused on it. So allowing your vagus nerve to bring down your breathing instead of firing it up, getting ready for fight or flight, is super important. And understanding, okay, you can feel when it's happening. You can physically feel that sensation of your lowered heart rate and your ability to calm down.
Right. So you used a really important word a minute ago about being aware. So what are some internal awareness cues that, you know, we should notice whenever we get fired up? And this can be in any situation, whether you're driving, and because that happens all the time, like people get so pissed off when they're driving. I mean, call it road rage.
I'm familiar as a passenger to that.
Well, I mean, let's think about the reason why that is, you know, because you're driving and it is potentially dangerous. You know, our body, you know, feel like this is a potentially dangerous situation whenever we're driving and someone cuts you off and you almost get in a wreck, you know, that is that fight or flight response. And we are trying
instant
to survive.
Right. And so that's okay when that happens, right? That's a really important, almost reflex for protection.
Sure.
But when we get caught up in it and you stay like that triggered from the stress, that's when it becomes an issue, right? So having some of the things in place, like, okay, I could feel this when you're asking about internal cues, you can almost feel your blood pressure go up, right? Or you start to get a little sweaty, or you can certainly feel your heart rate increasing when that's and especially when it's a little bit unexpected, you can really feel an instant rush, right? And that's your sympathetic nervous system saying, hey, we got to take action here. That adrenaline gets released, your epinephrine gets released, and your body's ready to go. So the things that can kind of bring it back down again is what do I have in place to calm down? Is it breathing? Can I actually use my breath to calm back down? And that does take a conscious effort. It's not just like, oh, my body will just you know, slow back down, because like you said, for some people it doesn't, until it really kind of your situation gets out of control. So really having some of those things in place can be really, really beneficial, like in the moment of stress, right? The one thing we can control is our breathing. That's the one thing we can control, right? We can't always control our external environment, or when someone cuts you off or in buds. You guys know you're preparing for something, but you don't even know exactly what's coming sometimes. So the only thing that we can really control is our internal environment, our breathing. And so having some of those tools, the box breathing, or there's another way, 4-7-8 breathing, different, you know, times of things. And certainly meditation can be beneficial. Maybe not meditation so much when you're driving, but but having some of those things in place, when you sense that overwhelm happening, what is it that we can do, you know, to bring back down the stress? I think another really difficult thing that we see is it your nervous system gets hit over and over and over again, and a lot of people just stay redlining, right? You just redline it, and then you start to kind of search for those moments, right? You're kind of out looking for it, because that's how your body recognizes how to respond. And the more you respond in a certain way, your body gets used to that, right? And so this also has to do with resiliency. If we can start to change how we respond to certain situations, we have the ability to change how our body actually works in those situations. And I'm not saying that we're going to take away your ability to get so heightened when it's needed, but I'm talking about your ability to bring it back down when that sense of overwhelm is there.
Yeah, you know, one of my internal cues is, and I've become aware of this probably in the last 15, 20 years, it's taken some time to kind of grow and understand it. It has been, and I think the earlier you learn this, the better you're going to be,
right?
Is it starts with me in my gut, mm-hmm. right? Whether it, for lack of a better term, butterflies in your mm-hmm. stomach, you know, just like hit you there. And then I notice my heart rate increases, and then my breathing increases. And then from there, my hands are sweaty, right? So it just it starts in my gut and it goes out. And then once I feel it in my gut, I can usually do a quick little assessment of like, what is happening here? Because maybe it's picking up something that I am not consciously picking up, right? Mm-hmm. There are those unique moments, you know, with perception. And, you know, so I just do a quick assessment. I'm like, okay. And I have to verbally say this. So I not only say it, but I hear it. I say, there's no threat here. Mm-hmm. Right. There is no threat here. And that helps so much to just like bring me back down, and then gets my breathing in a normal rhythm. So I start off every time I get that rush, is, you know, I just use the term, there's no threat here, mm-hmm. as long as there isn't one, and then just bring it down that way. You know, the term, I guess you could call that a form of, like, sports psychology calls them performance cues.
Yep. Yeah, you know? Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also that's what I mean by awareness too, right? When I'm talking about self-awareness, I'm really talking about how something feels inside, right? How you're relating to the environmental, the stress around you. That's not necessarily happening inside. So you're saying, you know, I have this kind of a gut sensation going on. Okay. That's really important that you recognize it, because then we have the ability to do something about it. Right. And your cue for you consciously is saying, there's no threat. You know, for some people, if they still perceive that threat and it kind of continues, it's really about, you know, having the ability to calm down, like you say too, when it's not necessary to be. So also just call it excited, that your body's not so excited. And some, for you, it's your gut. Some people, it starts with your heart rate is beating fast. Okay, I can feel that almost immediately, that my heart rate went up.
Oh, yeah, it can feel like it's coming through your chest.
You bet, it's sitting in your throat. And yeah. And then we have the opportunity to make change, right? To you know, how am I going to change this so it doesn't become overwhelming? And that's what we talk about, you know, the breathing, or, you know, the self-talk also can be, well, it can be beneficial. So that's kind of where we, you know, lean on some of the practices that we teach here at Performance First, and starting a consistent practice with understanding what is happening right now, and is this actually appropriate for the stress that's coming at me, or is it not?
Right. So what would you recommend for someone who is like listening and they're like, I probably need some better internal awareness. Mm-hmm. I probably also need to understand a little bit better about what you're talking about with meditation and just breathing, maybe breathing first, meditation second. You know, I have my own form of meditation that I like to call, and you know, it's borderline that. One thing I like to do is I put earplugs in my ears so I can really hear myself breathe.
Oh, that's smart. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And then I focus on my breathing while I'm laying down on the floor with my feet elevated on the couch. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as I do that, my dog comes right up next to me and lays with me. And then I can feel him do this cleansing breath, mm-hmm. right? And together we are like going through this cleansing breath ritual that we do. And then eventually, as my wife says, you're both snoring in about 10 minutes. So it turns into a nap, but it starts off purely me focusing on breathing and just having my little buddy next to me breathing with me.
Yeah. That's so great, Stu. I think some of the things that can help when we're talking about box breathing, and especially when somebody's new to it, you know, meditation has some weird stigmas to it, you know, about sitting in a crazy position and om and stuff like that. So we can start talking about, you know, the box breathing that you're saying, right? Just learning how to actually slow down your heart rate. I mean, we're breathing all the time, kind of unconsciously. Our body's doing the work. So when we put our conscious effort into our breath and slow it down, then you're starting to build that relationship with your nervous system that I was talking about at the beginning, and really understanding, okay, this is working for me, you know, doing a 4 second inhale, 4 second hold, 4 second exhale, 4 second hold, really allowing you to focus on slowing down that breath. Meditation sort of does a similar thing, but instead of actually manipulating the breath, we're just recognizing it, where you're allowing it to be. Is, you know, can I actually be with this discomfort? And what is it that's coming up? Can I be okay with what is? I can't change the things that are going to potentially happen, and I don't know them. And so we like to really distract ourselves because we don't like the way that feels, right? So sitting with it and starting to become comfortable and allowing some of those sensations to come up, because it's not happening necessarily in real time when you're practicing meditation, right? The idea is to practice before the stressful event shows up. So meditation just allows us really to accept the what is, accept what's happening, and feeling the sensations that are happening in our body, and allowing our body to naturally slow down once we realize that the threat isn't actually present, right? So that's sort of how we approach meditation. And meditation, there's so many different types. Like, I love the way that you are describing it. And to me personally, I that is a meditation practice. A lot of people go on slow walks where you're really starting to focus on the sounds of nature rather than the sounds of humaning, right? The sounds of cars going by, the sounds of jets flying over. So really focusing on nature, the, you know, what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what you're smelling outside naturally is another really good way to incorporate meditation. And then there's a whole bunch of different guided meditations and different apps that can be beneficial to Headspace, Calm. The one I choose is called Insight Timer. So there's all kinds of different types of meditation. I think it's also really important to find things that work for you. You know, if sitting still, and I know a lot of the guys that come through our training have a really hard time just being still.
Sure.
And when you're new to meditation, sometimes that's not the best way to approach it. So finding a position that works for you and having your little buddy next to you, I think is fantastic. You're not going to go for like a run or something doing meditation necessarily. Yes, running can release some of the same chemicals that meditation does, but it's not, you're not necessarily meditating while you're running. So finding positions that are comfortable to you that you can be in for a little while to start to recognize what is happening here is super important when you're starting.
Yeah, I find that, you know, I try meditation, and like I said, it often turns into a nap. But when I'm doing it, I do notice thoughts that are coming mm-hmm. in, right? And you know, I'm not sure what to call them. Are they intrusive thoughts or are they just thoughts? And what is it about meditation that you're doing when you're focusing on your breathing? Because when I'm doing box breathing, I can kind of go to a happy place and not have any thoughts. But then sometimes something interferes with that box breathing. I forget about box breathing, and now I'm thinking about this thought. So what about it, meditation, are we doing in that moment? What are we trying to do?
It's like I said before, it's just allowing thoughts to come and go, allowing sensations to come and go. But what happens is we get caught on a thought or the next thought or the next thought, and you don't even know where the first thought came from. And then all of a sudden you're scratching your head and you're like, God, I'm uncomfortable. It's like this, it's like kind of disgusting what our minds do. We're all over the fucking place.
Oh, yeah.
Stupid language, right?
Oh, okay.
that's actually sort of, we're accepting those things that are, oh, this is, you know, this is coming and going. Gosh, that's super annoying that this is happening. And wait a minute, can I come back to my breath and be still for a moment? And it's in those moments of coming back to stillness and feeling your breath and allowing your thoughts and your attention to go back to your breath, where you're feeling it the most. How are you experiencing it? Is my breath short or long? Is it, you know, in my chest, or can I take some, you know, am I breathing deeply, or what is actually happening with my body in this moment? We're not going to stop our thoughts. We're human beings. We can't, we're all over the place, you know, and on top of that, we're super judgmental. So as soon as you sit down, you're like, oh, I'm not good at this. Like, I should be doing this better. And again, it's actually just taking you out of that practice, right? That's another distraction. It's sort of, okay, yep, this is hard, I know, and accepting it and coming back to it.
Yeah. I love that term, accept it, because that really seems to be the key to successfully, you know, entering your mind and not thinking you're crazy or not thinking that you have an inability to meditate. That's really what meditation is. It's just kind of naming it, saying there's that thought. And then you can deal with it later, or you can deal with it then. You can say, why am I having this thought? Maybe it's because I need to focus on this activity after this activity is complete. I always try to say, when I have those thoughts, I say, huh, I'll remember that. I'm putting it in my backpack for now, going back to breathing.
Right. So I think another important thing too, to really understand, is that meditation isn't going to get rid of something. We're not going into meditation like, oh God, okay, I'm going to stop this from happening. Or it's really just allowing the sensations to come up, and we recognize it, and we build our internal awareness as it relates to the external stress. But you're not trying to get rid of it. It's just being okay with it. And once you can start to accept that this is going on, we actually do have the ability to naturally start to slow our breath rate down during a meditation practice, you know, accept what comes up. This is interesting. You know, my thoughts are all over the damn place. Okay, let me come back to my breath, where I feel it the most. Can I hear it? How am I feeling while I'm, you know, sitting there with it? Can I sit with my discomfort?
Yeah. You know what I found too, is that when you have this ability to accept the incoming thoughts that are occurring, and put them in their proper place, it really does help you with, one, calming down. Also helps you with going to sleep at night, because one of the things that keeps us up at night, just constant thoughts of what I have to do tomorrow.
Right.
And you know, especially if it's the night before, you know, SEAL Trail, Saturday night, and you're going to start Sunday night, you know, it'd be nice to get a good night's sleep before staying up for next 5 days. So, you know, having that ability to, you know, breathe through it, re-engage, accept some of those, you know, thoughts that are coming in, put them in their place, and get a good night's sleep.
Yes, exactly. I think, and one of the things I tell myself too, when I start to get overwhelmed, is, what is the story I'm telling myself? And is it true? What is the story I'm telling myself? Because a lot of times also, when it's the night before something big, we go to like the worst case situation. Like, what if I don't do this? What if this happens? What if, right? And we start to spin this crazy story that's that's a story. It's not true, right? And so what is the story I'm telling myself, and is it true? And that's another.
That's a really great one, because you know what I do with that one? I call this contingency thinking.
Yeah.
Right? Whenever everything's going wrong, right? I actually put it in a place in my brain of like, this is contingency thinking. This is how it's going to go. However, I have a plan for anything over here that occurs.
The worst case scenarios, right?
This is my contingency.
And we're so good at the human doing, right? Like, you're preparing for some crazy worst case scenario, which 99% of the time isn't going to happen, but you're preparing that in your head. And we don't even know what that looks like. We're just making scenarios up, right?
Yep.
And the majority of the time it's not true and it's not going to happen, right? So accepting like, I really don't know what's going to happen the next day, but I've prepared as much as I possibly can, right? So if you do get offline with the thought process, your body's still going to respond appropriately to the stress.
Right. So that is what we call, what we've been discussing is what we call left of the boom, right? So you know what I'm saying? So it's before anything stressful has occurred, we have already made it very stressful, right? We have already made it stressful by our own anxiety.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So now,
and to the point where you can almost talk yourself out of performing.
Oh, sure.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the other side of it, right? So after the stressful event, and let's say it's a traumatic event that has occurred, mm-hmm. right? How can we use these same tools to help us on the back end of, you know, post-traumatic stress
right.
type issues
yeah.
that are very common, and especially the tactical world where you see things that are hard to unsee.
Right. I do want to say this too. Meditation does not take the place of therapy.
Oh no.
And it does not take the place of when somebody's really struggling and does need actual help from other people. So I just want to make that clear. But again, it's really learning that relationship inside. And when the stress isn't occurring anymore, do we have the ability to retrain our nervous system to come back down into a parasympathetic state where this stress isn't necessary? The issue happens though, is that we can't, you know, a lot of people don't have the tools to do so. So then we start to turn to drugs. We start to turn to all these other distractions so that we either don't have to feel it, or so that it gives us this instant, you know, relief. And then, you know, and again, then our nervous system tanks and we look for the next thing. Meditation long-term can certainly help build resiliency to a traumatic situation. It gives us the ability to understand our body's relationship to our trauma. And how do we come back down from that through meditation or breath practice? I think it's also really important to, you know, even through meditation, to potentially have some support in the rooms. So you're not alone. You know, nobody's alone. And I know that at times it can really feel like that. And I know this is, you know, we're doing this, you know, a couple of weeks after we've lost a couple people, in special forces. And I think it's really important that, you know, meditation is taken seriously, and that when you're practicing, there's a term that we have in meditation called the window of tolerance, meaning that if you're trying to sit with something on purpose that's difficult or challenging, like a situation of trauma, and you feel that sense of overwhelm to the point where you have lost control of your breathing and it's so uncomfortable to sit there, you're outside of that window of tolerance. We're unable to tolerate what we're trying to work through. So it's super important to stay within that window of tolerance and be open to what might be coming up. And it's really uncomfortable because when we feel vulnerable, we feel really exposed, and we feel really, it can feel humiliating. It can feel like, I shouldn't be experiencing this again, or I shouldn't be having this way. So, potentially having somebody else in the room with you when you are going through that much trauma is really helpful, and also staying within that window of tolerance and stopping the meditation, stopping the breathing practice when it is overwhelming. There's no reason to sit with it if it's doing more harm than good.
Right. And that, I think that would be a good indicator for anyone that, you know, you need to talk to somebody that is a professional.
Oh, you bet.
In mental health. And, you know, it could be someone as, you know, if you feel more, and I have seen this work well too, is a sports psychologist, mm-hmm. right? Some reason people will go see a sports psychologist before they go see a psychiatrist or a mental therapist. And I understand that, you know, mm-hmm. but it's the same stuff.
Yes.
They're using the same tools to deal with the anxiety and the obtrusive thoughts and flashbacks, you know, and mm-hmm. something that I've learned from actually a sports psychologist was, you know, just because you're having these thoughts and these memories come back, it doesn't mean you're crazy. Right.
All it is
your body, your brain is dealing with something that was very traumatic, and it is trying to organize it in a way so it doesn't happen again, so you can survive. Our brain mm-hmm. is built to survive, right?
Right,
and
exactly.
It makes our whole body a survival machine. And, you know, I just thought that was very powerful. You know, you're not crazy because you have a flashback. And the thing that that really hit home to me the most was, He said, imagine you're a deer in the woods and you're just walking around and you're sniffing and doing all the things that deer do, but you know that you're not the apex predator, so you're always on some kind of an alert. And you smell something triggers, you know, a hearing, you hear something, and then all of a sudden a mountain lion jumps out and you get away. Right. You live to do what you do another day. Right. You escape that. But the next time you're walking around in the woods and you see that little trigger, that smell, that what you hear, you know, those are triggers that may bring back that mm-hmm. thought of that mountain lion coming on. And it may very well be a mountain lion coming on, and you take off before it even. You even see the mountain lion, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, these are just ways that our brain uses exterior or outside awareness to survive.
Right.
And you're not crazy
right.
when this happens, right?
Yeah,
this is a survival skill.
Real. Yeah, the emotions are still real, and the sensations that come up are still real, even if the threat is not happening anymore, the traumatic event isn't happening anymore, but the sensations and the emotions are very real. And that's what I mean too. Like when we're sitting and working with that, when it's on purpose, you know, staying within that window of tolerance is really important. And really, you know, being forgiving to yourself that it is difficult. Normalizing that situation for yourself is so important too. Like this is, like you said, it's normal. Flashback is normal. Allowing yourself to learn how to be okay with it. And I don't mean like you're going to talk yourself into being okay. Nope, Catherine, you're okay. Stu, I'm good. It's really actually, you know, over time, peeling back some of those layers that we've built up for protection, right? And it's a slow practice because it is uncomfortable, it is vulnerable, and it's incredibly painful sometimes.
Sure. Have you ever heard the term name it and tame it?
Hold on one second. The jets are flying over.
Yeah.
I'm
have
sorry.
You ever heard the term name it and tame it?
Yes.
Name it and tame it. I uh-huh. love that. And that was from a sports psychologist too, that I heard this term, but I've applied it to so much more than just sports. You
sure.
know, it is like that thought that comes in that's really keeping me awake, you know, like give it a name. Your brain says, okay, that's what that is. I'm going to put this here. Right. And it's no longer floating around your head trying to drive you crazy.
Yeah.
I found that to be very useful as well.
Yeah. When something comes up too, sometimes we don't even know what the sense that the emotion is. Sometimes we recognize a discomfort without even understanding what it is. Sometimes it's anger. Sometimes it's fear. Sometimes it's resentment, grief, whatever it is, but it's understanding what is it actually, and can you name it, And can you be okay with it? You know, is that okay? Or is there something behind it? You know, I'm really angry at this. But what is actually behind the anger? You know, am I afraid of something? Is there a misunderstanding? Am I blaming? Is there shame? What's actually behind it that this is the instant reaction? But how do I start to kind of peel back these layers to understand it so that it doesn't continue to happen, that doesn't continue to be my reaction when it's not needed?
Yeah. You know where I've used this, that little name it and tame it phrase often, is when my kids were little and they'd have a bad dream. And, you know, I'd go in there, we'd talk about it a little bit, and I said, let's give this a name, right? Let's give whatever this bad dream character was, let's give it a name. And we'd name it something funny, like Booger Eater. And, you know, we giggle, and, you know, it's like, okay, we won't worry about Booger Eater anymore. And, you know,
right.
It just kind of found a little name, found a little, you know, little file in the brain, and it quit floating around, and, you know, he gets back to sleep again. So it's,
yeah, I think it's super important also to be able to work through those types of situations, because if we don't, you know, that then we start to build up this, you're building the resiliency, not resiliency, but you're building up these habits in not necessarily a healthy way, right? Okay, this is my response to all of these scenarios. I'm just going to be angry, and really not understanding, giving yourself the opportunity to understand what you're actually going through or what you're dealing with. And so it's really important to give yourself that opportunity to understand what is actually happening here. You know, no, I'm not just angry. There's probably some sadness or whatever behind it also, right? But a lot of times we don't even allow ourselves to get past that initial response. We're like, F this, I'm just going to go on a tirade and smash things.
Right.
So it's really important to give yourself some patience to work through that.
Yeah, I love that. So let's wrap this up, Catherine. What would you say a key takeaway for someone interested in just learning how to deal with anxiety, and learning, and maybe even getting into beginner level meditation?
Yeah. So first and foremost, like I said before too, is starting to build a consistent practice. Like one time of a box breathing or one time of meditation isn't going to be the solution. It's consistent practice over time. And you know, maybe trying for a couple minutes, maybe a couple times a week might be beneficial. I think it's really helpful to have some guidance when you're first starting, because again, our minds are all over the place. So using an app can be really beneficial, and having somebody guide you through that. And there's so many different types of meditations that might resonate with people and that might not work for other people, right? So to really start to explore on some of those apps, I think is super helpful. And also staying consistent with a practice. And at the beginning, it's not going to feel good. It's not going to, oh shoot, are you?
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay, I lost you. I can't. Oh, there we go. Okay, I'm so
sorry.
I can
hear you. Yeah, we're good.
It's not super helpful sometimes to do this on your own, because you really don't know like what is coming up. I'm not good at this, you know, so to have guidance at the beginning, and then, you know, looking up some of the breathing practices, like the box breathing can, like you do with walking, is awesome. And I think that's a good place to start for beginners, is doing some breathing practices where you can actually let your concentration go to the breathing, and you can concentrate, you know, mentally on it. And then you can also feel, you can feel it pretty quickly. So I think that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's awesome. What's that?
I was going to say trying it different times a day. Like some people really like to start in the mornings doing a breath practice or a meditation practice, setting an intention for the day. And some people it works better in the afternoon, having the ability to put things down and just sort of reflect, and there's no more, you know, there's no more responsibility really at the end of the day. So I think just kind of trying things that you can start to build your own consistent practice with is really helpful.
Yeah. You know, it's almost like, you know, diet and exercise prescription.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Everybody kind of has their own little methods and what works best for them and what they enjoy. And, you know, I think that is a great way to kind of frame that mental piece.
Yeah. Yep. And also then you can come and train with Jeff and I in person and learn some different meditation. And that's part of our curriculum. If somebody comes here for the 6-week training course is meditation.
All right. Right. I think it's valuable. Very valuable. In fact, check it out. performancefirstus.com. Not only do they have these 6-week training blocks, but they also have a tactical fitness conference coming in the 21st, 22nd, and the 23rd of this month. And I would, you know, if you're in, if, especially if you're in the tactical world or considering serving in the tactical professions, you got to give it a check, because it's dealing with everything that's important: nutrition, the physical fitness, and the mental piece, because that's everything.
Right.
That, you know, a lot of these tactical conferences are focused on fitness, maybe a little bit of nutrition thrown in there. And, you know, I'm the fitness guy. You know, I'll be first to admit it, that, you know, I have to outsource for nutrition advice. I have to outsource for the mental advice. Right. And you get it all one-stop shop over there at performancefirstus.com.
Yeah, that's right. And we will do, we will have a couple meditation practices in that seminar, because I do want people to start to experience what I'm saying. And so I will be doing a couple guided meditations for that seminar too.
All right. Well, awesome. Catherine, thank you so much for taking some time and sharing us your expertise in this field, because it's so important. You know, and give Jeff my regards. I'm glad he made this recommendation, because this was great.
Thank you, Stu. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to see you.
All right. You too. All right, folks. You guys check out performancefirstus.com for everything over there that we just talked about, as well as, you know, come check out StuSmithFitness.com. That's where I live. And you can, you know, always ask me questions about stuff as well. So until next time, you guys have a good one.